And then when everything was said and done, I felt I, my father felt I had to go to England and go to university. Or do, no, I couldn't go to university because the exams we did were not that type. So he sent me to Secretariat College in London. And I was still in touch with him. And, you know, sort of Secretariat College, and that was hell. I didn't have the right clothes for England in the winter. There were coupons for clothes in England. I was freezing to death. You know, it was really, oh, what a shock. And to make matters even worse, I was to stay with an uncle, you know, who lived there, who sadly had lost a baby, and he and his wife had locked themselves up in a room, and I had a room with no heating, didn't have the right shoes, right clothes. If that was a test for survival, I can tell you that was one.
Shock to the system.
Absolutely.
And how long were you there?
I went to college, to Secretariat College for 6 months. And then after Secretariat College, they gave you jobs to go to.
Yes.
And of course, you know, I had French, Spanish, and English, you know. And so eventually, British South American Airways, Air Vice Marshal Bennett.
Bennett, yes.
Grabbed me. Because, you know, he was starting British South American Airways to South America. And he was finding it extremely difficult, you know, with the language. And, you know, in those days, not many people spoke Spanish.
No.
And so he grabbed me. And I mean, from a little secretary that would have, you know, been doing messages, I was right up at the top. And translating all the landing procedures in South America, you know, for aeroplanes, doing a lot for the line. I mean, he wouldn't let me go. And then he said, "Mary Lou, do you want to go to Lisbon?" I said, "Yes," because, you know, I'd lived in Madeira, I spoke Portuguese, I had a Portuguese boyfriend somewhere in the background, and so you know, Air Vice Marshal Bennett was quite a character, I can tell you. He just, you know, not a piece of paper from a pad. No, he got a piece of paper like that to my boss in, because I was working for the traveling superintendent. Mary Lou Montegrifo was my name, is to go to Lisbon tomorrow. Just like that. So it wasn't tomorrow, it was the day after tomorrow. And eventually I arrived in Lisbon, British South American Airways, and I had a job there, you know, and sort of I found myself a little bedsitter somewhere, and you know, I was, sorted out a lot of problems there, because the documentation in those days for South America was out of this world. Before the aeroplane left England, they had to go to the Uruguayan embassy, to the Brazilian embassy, to the... can you imagine, people in England who didn't really in those days speak much Spanish. That's why I became famous, you know, because I could do all these things. And so they decided that rather than all this, they sent me to Lisbon to sort it out, because when the aeroplane leaves, you know, the hostess gets all these little bits and pieces, and that, to them, it's nothing. So and then you get fined if the things were...
And so did you... Were you based in Lisbon, or did you actually travel?
No, I was. They sent me to Lisbon, and I was working for them in Lisbon.
So you
and
ran,
I
virtually ran the office there.
No, there was a manager there and everything like that. But I mean, I ran the aeroplane side of it.
Yeah.
And then I got headhunted by Scandinavian Airlines because they were having the same problem. And of course, at the airport, they say, "Oh, Mary Lou can sort everything out." So I then. They offered me more money, and they, you know, sort of, I changed from British South American Airways to Scandinavian Airlines. I started the same thing, except, the Scandinavians, I worked with them for 3 years, I think. I had to have a uniform, and in Portugal, if you sent a uniform from Sweden, I mean, honestly, the Swedes. Sweden to by mail legally. The Swedes like to do everything legally. You see. They haven't heard about the other thing. And so To get my uniform would take about 3 months. So they they decided to send me in one of the planes going northbound to Geneva, mm-hmm. where the other one came from Stockholm.
Oh, they sent you, flew you.
Yeah, but naked. I mean, because, you know, the Portuguese are, you know, the Portuguese are, oh, it's the Swedish. So, look, just put on a bra and pants and a duffel coat and a raincoat. Yeah. Off I go to Geneva. I get to Geneva and I miss the plane.
Oh, no.
The station manager in Geneva didn't know what to do with me. You know, this woman naked. So he took me to a shop and bought me a dress. Of course, I chose the most expensive dress I could find.
How long were you
in Geneva?
Air hostess.
Oh, no, I wasn't an air hostess for Scandinavian Airlines.
How long did you work for the airlines?
I worked for Scandinavian Airlines, just trying to think, 2 years? Two or 3 years. I practically run Lisbon, because, you know, I spoke Portuguese, and you know, there was always...
So we're now, what, about 1952, something like that? You would have been how old?
I got married in 52, I think.
Yeah.
No, just trying to think.
Was it somebody that you met in Lisbon that you married?
Oh, I had my boyfriend from Madeira was in Lisbon.
Okay.
But then I very quickly gave up the Portuguese things, because they were very, Portuguese were very, very thing about women, you know, women couldn't go out, women could do this, you know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I was with British South American Airlines, and I went to Scandinavian Airlines, which is going another more modern type of living. And I had a flat there because, you know, they had crews. They had to change crews there, so I got a flat for the crews, and it was really a very happy time. And
so
lovely.
What happened after Lisbon then?
Then I got to the stage when, you know, I'd done everything. I owned Lisbon. I did what I wanted to do. And somebody talked me into joining BOAC and becoming an air hostess.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So then I came back to England. I went and did the course. You know, there's a very, you know, I don't know what they do now, but, you know, in BOAC in those days, you had to serve with, you know, like in a restaurant with a spoon and things like that.
Yes.
So I went to the catering school. I passed. And, you know, and of course, I wanted to go to the Far East because I'd never been to the Far East, but because of my Portuguese and my Spanish, I ended up in the South American lot, you know.
But that was where air travel was still quite a novelty, quite a luxury.
Oh, my God, the presents I used to get from these rich Brazilians, jeebus. Gosh, I mean, I was scared stiff because one of them invited me to his finca, and I thought, my God, if I come here, they'll disappear. Nobody would know where. Oh, the presents, and my goodness, it was really...
And at some stage, did your mother and father want to sort of haul you back in a little bit? And
No.
How often did you visit them back in Gibraltar?
Hardly ever. Honestly, life was so quick.
You
know, moved on. I had more contact with my father because he was with cable and wireless, and we used to communicate. I think they gave me up for lost as a sort of a
international.
And my father was. They came to visit me in Lisbon. And you know, I think my father was very proud of me. Extremely proud of me. My mother was scared stiff, but I mean, you know, I survived, you know, survived.
Now, all of this, I mean, we've been talking now for about an hour and a half.
Sorry.
No, it's
wonderful.
It's wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
That's absolutely fascinating run through. As far as what you, your identity, therefore, what would you would you say you're still firmly Gibraltarian?
I mean,
there's an element of Spanish, and but there's element of British, and there's an international element.
No, I'm much more international than anything.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
when do you think that changed?
Well, I think it changed. With can't help it. you live in Casablanca, you live in Tangier, right?
Yes.
Then you go to England. Then you go to all the places in South America.
Yes.
I consider myself... who is number one? Number two citizen of the world. There's a man who says himself is number one.
Yeah.
I'm number two.
you don't feel you have a... I was going to say, feel you have a home, somewhere you would, you know... No.
No, my home is me, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's...
I mean,
lot of,
you know...
A lot of people, I think.
I tell you what, at the moment I feel this is my home. This to me is sort of the end of the road, as it were, with that fantastic view.
But here it's quite nice. We're in Soto Grande in Spain, with a fabulous view across to Gibraltar.
Yeah, it's you know.
You don't look at Gibraltar and say that's my home. You say that's where I was born.
Yeah, I've never considered Gibraltar as my home.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, I was 13
yes.
when I left.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And then I've spent maybe 1 or 2 years there since then, living.
And what about...
Oh, no, wait a minute. Well, sorry, what am I talking about? When I got married,
mm-hmm.
My husband was in the Royal Air Force. We came to Gibraltar to live in Gibraltar.
Okay.
And that's when I started the first coal store in Gibraltar.
Yes. So your husband was... RAF?
Yes, he left the RAF, 57 I think it was, when Mark was born. My son Mark was born in 57 and we came to Gibraltar. He was a baby. We drove down, he was about 3 months old. And we came here with the idea, we'd already studied, of starting a frozen food company.
And that's what you mentioned there.
Yes.
And so, what's your view about the link between Gibraltar and UK, and what's your own personal, would you say, apart from those experiences in London?
The link between Gibraltar and UK. All I know is that, let me see. Before the war, most of the men in Gibraltar married Spanish women.
Mm.
And Spanish was spoken everywhere in Gibraltar. It isn't now, right? So things have changed. There's always been us and them. You know, Gibraltarians have never really, although a lot of them are come from Spanish thing, never have really
integrated.
No. And possibly with good reason, because you know, during the Franco days, they closed the frontier and things like that. So I don't blame them. But most of the people in Gibraltar got Spanish blood, because most of the men married Spanish women. There's a lot of Italian blood, but I think the Italian blood is disappearing. What probably was Italian blood now becoming English. You know, do you follow? Because
yes,
of marriages and things like that.
And in those early days, did your parents and their friends and you as children think of yourself as Gibraltarians?
Yes.
Or
this business,
British within the colony of Gibraltar?
This business of British, we are British, we stay, all started through the problem with Franco, you know, and all that. But in... Most of the men married Spanish women, you know, because a lot of the men obviously came from Italy. I think I've come to the conclusion that the Italians, Genoese names in Gibraltar, were people from Italy emigrating to the States and getting to Gibraltar and saying, we don't go anymore. I think, you know, and I haven't studied that, but I'm assuming that. Because of the names, they married Spanish women. So, and of course, in the latter years, there've been more marriages to English people.
Yeah,
you know, which is, and nowadays everybody speaks English in Gibraltar. In my days, everybody spoke Spanish. You see, and all this is to do as well with Franco closing the border, you know, and all that sort of thing. But that's the change, and the local Gibraltarian in general. Perhaps not the don't quote me on this, the upper classes, but the others really hate.
Most of the English men would have been Church of England.
I beg your pardon?
Most of the English men would have been Church of England, where most
There's
of the
a good church
girls would have been Catholic.
Yeah, but there were not many marriages. There were not many marriages.
No.
There were few, but not many. You know, yes, it's amazing, because really, it's not like that nowadays, but in my days, there was us and them.
Yes.
There's no doubt whatsoever.
Okay. Yeah.
And except for perhaps people like me, you know, who, you know, spoke English and, you know, but there were very few people. I remember in Madeira, when I finished my school certificate, my mother got me a job teaching Gibraltarian women to speak English.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Well, my mother couldn't bear to see me not doing anything.
Mary Lou, you've had a fascinating life. And
absolutely.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
I hope it hasn't been too boring.
No, that's been absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.